Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino.
Well, hello, everyone. It has been a very busy radio week for us with Gary Kobat, Eric Braden, and now Marjorie Hanson-Shavitz all in one week. It has just been, we're burning up the airwaves. It's kind of fun. Our show from 2 days ago is still featured on Blog Talk Radio, where we did this show with Gary Kobat, all about being frazzled and being tired and being overworked and stressed. And he did a full hour of free call-in coaching with us, and it proved to be something that people must have needed because it's still featured up there. And I know I've had a long week, but we are still chugging along. And we welcome today with us Marjorie Hanson-Shavitz. She is amazing. She's very cool. She's very worldly. And she is a professional. Well, there's a lot of things she is, but I'm going to read the thing we're going to focus on today a little bit. Well, mostly a bit. We'll talk about all the other things she's done in her life, too. But we're mostly going to talk today about how she's a professional admissions counselor and best-selling author. She has helped thousands of high school students navigate their way through the often very stressful and confusing college application process. Her newest book is called Admission Possible, The Dare to Be Yourself Guide for Getting into the Best College for You. Now, there's something to think about, the college that maybe you want to go to, that maybe your parents, you know, maybe don't want you to go to, but you want to go to it, or the parent, you know, the one that you want to go to that maybe your friends aren't going to, or, you know, picking the right college is tricky. I know my son is going to be a senior, and he's going through all that right now. He's like, which school should I go to? Which one are my friends going to? Which one do you think I'm going to get into? Which one do you think I'm good enough for? Good enough grades? Have enough money? On and on and on. The college process has started in our home. So I will be quiet for a minute here and let Marjorie chime in. What do you think, Marjorie? How are you today?
I'm great, and I'm so glad to be on this program because being yourself and really taking good care of yourself is what college admissions can be all of, but often is not.
Yeah. It gets stressful.
Oh, yes. But I have to tell you, it's stressful because I think people really don't know what it's all about, what to do, what to say, and have an organized program to approach this so that, you know, you simply do one thing at a time. It doesn't have to be that kind of experience for people, and that's why I become so involved with college admissions, not just in terms of working with individuals, but I put together a website that's free, and it's www.admissionpossible.com, where I lay out the five major steps of college admissions and exactly what to do for each step. And I don't even just start with seniors. I have information for freshmen if they're interested, certainly steps for sophomores. It gets more intense as juniors, as you know. And then finally, the senior year, exactly what you need to know and do with examples and samples and lists for everybody to follow. So it doesn't have to be as crazy as people often experience it.
Yeah, you know, I think of my own college experience, and I don't ever remember anybody, including my parents are not college graduates. I'm one of the few people in a family of 11 kids to have a college degree. And I remember knowing I actually wanted to be a doctor, but I remember knowing I was going to go to college. In fact, I graduated a year early out of high school to go to the University of Iowa and start there. But no one ever had a conversation with me about, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go to school? You know, all of those things. How are you going to pay for it? You know, all of those things.
Well, I think most people our age really did it have it that way. You applied to two or three schools, usually in your hometown or your home state. The counselors probably never talked to you.
No.
And all of what you did is you kind of had to find out on your own and fill out on your own. You hoped that you might get in. And so many people never even saw a college until they arrived with their suitcases in the freshman dorm.
That was me, exactly. I was like, okay, well, you know, I was raised in Iowa, and I'm like, well, you know, I guess the next logical step is the University of Iowa.
Sure.
I don't know. You know,
which, by the way, is a very good school.
Awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. And I actually ended up after a year of college there going, this is too big for me, because I was from a real tiny school, you know, maybe 700 kids total.
Yep.
And I ended up downsizing and upsizing all in one shot. I ended up going to a private college called St. Ambrose in Davenport, Iowa, and just had the most wonderful experience in college.
Well, that statement alone gives you some idea about when you begin thinking about college. Now, what I urge students to do is to really figure out what you need and want in a college. And, you know, you can start out with, in what city or state do I want to be in? Do I want to be a big or large, a big or small school? Big schools, you'll have many more courses, all kinds of things going on. But a smaller school will be a much more intimate experience. You'll have access to professors. There's more feeling of home. You know, do you want to be with people who are kind of like you? Those are clearly questions that students need to ask these days, because what happens is that you can really get a hold of where you're going to go to college, and colleges sense whether or not you've done your homework. In other words, you can actually increase your chances of getting into colleges as if you can demonstrate through your answers and maybe an interview that you might have that you really get what that college is and how you and the college are really good fits.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just want to part of your makeup I did not read yet on the air, because I just wanted to kind of get started and chat a little bit. But let me just tell you, to everyone listening, Marjorie knows what she is talking about for sure. She's got a master's degree in counseling psychology from Stanford, and she became an orientation officer for the East-West Center in Honolulu, Hawaii, where you assisted students from Asia, Southeast Asia, and the Pacific to adjust to school in the U.S., and then later you went back to Stanford as a member of the Dean of Students Office, where that is where it all began for you. What did you do there?
Well, I was actually in charge of a very, very large dormitory, residence hall, Florence Moore Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And there, at that point, it was an all-girls dorm. And my job was really to help every student in that dorm get the most out of the university. And, of course, basically, when problems came up, I was there to help address those issues. And I used to do all kinds of programs for women at that point in terms of how to think about having a career, how to balance family and career, how to focus in on what their interests were and pursue them at Stanford. So you can see there's a kind of theme in my life started right there.
And you're a licensed marriage and family therapist as well. You went on from there to direct the reentry program for returning adult students at the University of California, San Diego. And then you co-authored the McGraw-Hill book, So You Want to Go Back to School. I love this, because after you had children, you spent 12 years as a trustee for a school in San Diego and then served back on the Stanford University Parents Board.
Yeah.
And that's just so cool. What a journey.
Well, it's been a good ride. It's been a good life. And one of the reasons why I want to do the work I'm doing now is that I've been very fortunate. And part of what I see is that there's so many students who come from low-income, first-generation, maybe foster youth or underrepresented students of color who don't have the advantages that I had. And so in one way or another, through websites or the written materials, I think everybody should have available the information that I know about college admissions. In fact, I'm even working with the San Diego Library System to develop programs so that they have books and internet access and programs reaching out to underserved students, because budget cuts are taking away public school counselors at a rate that you just won't believe.
Right.
In California, the ratio between students and counselor is 1,000 to 1. Can you imagine?
I can actually. I'm from there.
Okay. All right.
One of the reasons why we live in Maine.
Well, good for you. I understand. But it's the whole idea is that when you've had opportunities, I think it's really important that you take what you know and spread it around.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I could go on and on here reading all the amazing things that you've done. I'm just going to tell people a few more things, and then we're going to really focus in on this whole college thing. You're a member of the National Association for College Admissions Counseling and an associate member of the Independent Educational Consultants Association. You've been a columnist for all sorts of things. You've been in the Wall Street Journal, the Huffington Post, and 17 Magazine, and you're also the author of a few other books, The Confident Woman and The Superwoman Syndrome, which is we just talked about The Superwoman Syndrome 2 days ago on the show with Gary Kobat, where he, you know, we donned capes basically and
right.
made dinner, right. had jobs, and did it all. But you founded Admission Possible in 1996, and then in 2007 you created a website, AdmissionPossible.com. Let me spell that for people listening. It's AdmissionPossible.com. This is a free college admissions website that offers additional college admissions information and advice. So I want to go back a little bit. Oh, you've been on Oprah too. That's cool. I'm loving that. How's that?
It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. That actually happened when I was very involved with women's issues and wrote the book, The Confident Woman. But I think one of the things I should say is that what happened when I was involved with reentry programs, and for people who don't know, that means programs to help adults go back to school.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found that was really inhibiting the people that I was helping, and these were mostly women, was they had such difficulty balancing school and sometimes work and often families and husbands and everything else they were doing. And so that's what kind of moved me into writing about how to better balance your life. And that my husband and I wrote a book on two career couples. I wrote The Superwoman Syndrome. And then even in the last decade, I wrote a book about The Confident Woman. You know, what are the issues that women need to deal with in order to be competent and confident in the way they live? All of this then comes right back to how to help parents and students approach the college admissions process, because everything I learned during those years really applies to students as much as it does adults, because their lives are crazy, you know. They're super kids.
Super kids, super moms, and super dads, and super everybody right now. We're living in a very fast-paced environment for sure.
Absolutely.
So let's go back here, and let's just talk about all the college admissions for a moment here.
Sure.
And now I've got a little guy. He's 10, and he swears that he's going to Stanford. Do you think do you think kids can start thinking about college that young and really execute on that as they are a senior? Do you think some kids just know?
Well, I think what happens is that no matter whether a kid is interested in school or in surfing or in fishing or in physics or raising snakes.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
I think part of our role as a parent is to help kids act on their interests. And you know, sometimes they say things and they don't really mean them. But if they're really interested in something, I think we should help them to, you know, to know what that means. Encourage them to do research, to read, to find out. And 10 is a little bit early, I think, to, you know, to be pursuing college. However,
really
the fact is that, you know, one of the things you might do if you come out here to California is, you know, my husband and I spent a lot of time in universities, and when we visited colleges, visited cities or families or were on business, we often took our children with us, and we would go to the campuses that were nearby simply because we thought they were cool places to visit, and we could see a lot of things and do a lot of things. And so to begin exposing your child to different colleges, and if you were to come to California, you know, go visit Stanford. There, you know,
what we did. That's why he's hooked. Now we're really in trouble. That's exactly what we did. We were like, oh, well, we're out here.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Well, we went to, well, we have a house in Tahoe still. And so we were visiting, and we drove down to San Francisco and, you know, just our old stomping grounds because two of the kids were born in Walnut Creek there.
Uh-huh.
And so we took him over to Stanford thinking, okay, this will just kind of put this to bed, and it made it worse. He's like, I need a shirt. I need a hat. It was very funny. So I think I'll have a kiddo. Who knows what will happen in the years, but very funny. He is just dead set on Stanford. Now, let's go from him to, for example, a senior in high school who might not know where they're going to college right now.
I think the first thing you need to do is to help him figure out what he wants in a college. And that's easier said than done. But one of the things that I have done is I put together a college selection questionnaire. And that's available on my... By the way, I'm not trying to sell anything. These are free resources.
Oh,
no.
Yeah,
there.
We know. Don't worry about that. We've got a whole hour. And
okay.
So we're going to talk about everything. That's why I'm kind of covering the big scope of topics right now. Because, you know, we have a whole hour of time to really go in depth. So feel free to... You know, there's a lot of people listening, and it'll all help. And we're going to... To the listener, what I'm doing is I'm focusing on the extremes first, and then we're going to go... delve right into, you know, maybe that freshman in high school or that eighth grader and go hopefully up through the process of, you know, taking somebody entering high school and figuring out how to get them in college. That's really what I'm hoping we could do. So, but let's say there's a senior in high school and they have no clue what to do.
Yeah.
They're in that senior year and they still, I mean, is it too late? If you're in your senior year and you don't know?
Absolutely not. And that's why I would say if you go onto my website, there's a tab called Examples and Lists. And the second item in that is a college selection questionnaire. And what you can do is you can either let your child on his own or you can work with him. You go through, and there are all kinds of different things that I offer them an opportunity to think about. Physical location, you know, do you want to be in the Northeast? Do you want to be in the West, in the South, and the Midwest? And I give the actual names of the states. And then you want to think about, you know, what kind of environment. You said you moved from California to Maine, and I can imagine why you'd want to do that. And maybe he wants to stay where it's near mountains and where it's, you know, he's involved with really cool weather, but it snows sometimes. Or maybe he remembers visiting California and says, no, I want to go back where it's sunny and where there are beaches and maybe even a desert or two. What you do is you go to this college selection questionnaire, and there are all kinds of questions that you can fill in. And then basically what you do is you kind of summarize what it is that you want. Okay, this is a start, all right? The reason I put together this questionnaire is there's nothing like this right now. There are some college selection internet programs, but mostly they ask what you want in a college. They don't ask you what you want. And even if the kid doesn't know what he wants, to present him with all of these different aspects of what he should be thinking about, that is a really good start. So you start there, and you find out what it is that you're looking for, and you may be right, or you may not be right, but it's a start. From there, the second thing to do is to to figure out which colleges are actually realistic for you, what which ones are in your ballpark. And the way you do that, has your son taken the PSAT or SAT?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get your PSAT or SAT or the ACT scores, and you use them to take a look at what the median SAT range is for the colleges that you are interested in. Now, one of the things that I've done, again, because it's not available, is on my website I have in the application information something called test scores, acceptance rates, number of students, and whether or not the college accepts the common application. But in that area, I have listed what this 25th to 75th percentile score is, which means that most of the students who are successful getting into that college are in that range. So you look to see, let's say your son has, and by the way, right now this is based on just the math and critical reading scores, because often when colleges report their scores, and this is what U.S. News uses to report test scores, they use just the SAT or ACT reading and math scores. So let's say your combined score for your son is 1,200. So the first college on my list there is Amherst College. And their median SAT scores are 1340 to 1540. So 1200 is a little bit below Amherst College, so that probably is not one of the schools that might be available to him. But if you go down to Babson College, the scores are 1170 to 1340. Bingo. That sounds like a good option. And if you go to another one, Bard College, not too far from you, they're test optional. So he doesn't have to worry about college scores. So what I'm saying is you start out with you and what you want, and then you kind of see what colleges are available to you, and you put the two together. Once you've done that, then it's time to begin really reading about the colleges. And you can do that in wonderful books like The Fifth Guide that give descriptions of colleges from students' point of view. There's another one called The Insider's Guide, and you can buy them or you can go to the library and check them out. There are also some really wonderful online resources, www.unigo.com and www.thecollegeprawler.com. You go to these websites, and they will have visual tours of the colleges, as well as lots and lots and lots of comments by students who are actually going to these schools. And as you read and as you look at these things, I really urge students to write down the names of the colleges and next to it, what do you like and what do you don't like. And if you're going to buy one of those books, then what I suggest is you highlight in one color, let's say green, everything that you like. And then you also highlight, like an orange color maybe you don't like, everything you don't like. And what you're doing is you're really checking out if those things that you thought you liked are there, and you're learning about what colleges have to offer you. The really cool thing about doing this is that later on when you answer the question from schools, why do you want to go here? You got the ammunition. You just go back to those green underlines, and that's going to be helpful. If you have trouble really coming up with a list and you're still not feeling like you're on top of it, you know, talk with your high school counselor or teachers about what colleges they know that they think might be good fit for you. And you can let them know, you know, this is what I'm looking for. Where do you think would be good? And check out what they have to say. And finally, there's no substitute for visiting colleges. I mean, that is simply the best way of seeing whether or not you like a school. There's a wonderful author by the name of Malcolm Gladwell who has written a book called Blink. And what he says is that usually when you get to a college, or you get to, you're buying a house, or you're meeting people, you'll know within the first 2 or 3 minutes whether or not this is a good match for you. And it's not just superficial things. There are all kinds of things that really come into play, and it has been very rare.
Yeah.
That I haven't found that when you get on a campus, you say, oh, my God, I love this place, or, you know, I don't really like it. Pay attention to your gut.
Yep, absolutely. Now, okay, so you said a key word in all of that. There was a ton of information, but one thing I heard was check with your counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Do kids in high school spend a lot of time with their counselors these days?
Well, unfortunately, it depends on where they are. As I told you, college counseling is becoming less and less available to public school kids. But if there is a college counselor, that is a very important person to your child, because this is the person who's going to write the school report for the colleges if they're applying to private universities. And this is the person the colleges are going to call if they have information that they want about you. I urge students to really go out of their way to meet the counselor, develop a relationship with him or her, and do that before you're a senior, so that you can have an ally there in school and see about whether or not they can be helpful in suggesting colleges. Sometimes they're not available. You know, as I said, the national student-to-counselor ratio is just going up and up and up. And if that's the case and there's nobody there available, then often teachers are good resources as well. And I think it's really important that students find someone in the school that they can talk to about their questions about college admissions.
And if you're with a, if you go to your counselor or if a parent, do parents ever go? Here's the disconnect I'm having with this process, and that's that I feel like I'm not involved at all in that counseling meeting with that counselor. I feel like it's kind of like the child and the counselor, or no conversation at all happening, and mine is just sort of fumbling out there trying to figure it out on his own, because it's not cool to go in and check with the counselor, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know how that is with kids,
yeah.
You know, especially a boy, too. They're not going to go in there if nothing is dramatically wrong or whatever. And so there's communication happening in our house, for example, but it's in the form of flyers coming from colleges because we've taken that PSAT. But beyond that, at this point, and maybe there shouldn't be because it's early. He's only a junior at this point. But, you know, he's starting to – he'll throw some of them out and keep some of them. He's kind of got a cubby going on. But there's no dramatic hard choices being made at this point, not even thinking about visiting and so forth. So let's back it up to that junior year. We talked about senior year. What should be happening in the junior year?
Well, I think there are two or three things. First of all, my bias and the students who are most successful that I work with basically see this as a family enterprise. The parents really have a lot to offer, and one of the things I have on my website is a section on parents and what they can do every phase along the way so that they don't get in the way of the kids, but they are supportive, they provide resources, they organize things, and so forth. And by the way, in Admission Possible, the book, I have a whole chapter on developing relationships with counselors and teachers, and I tell students what to say, what to do, and how within their own comfort zone to make these kind of connections, because if they have colleges they want to go to, these are really important people. These are people who are going to write the recommendations that colleges really pay attention to. And so one way or another, they need to get connected. And in terms of parents, I think it's really important to sit down and have maybe a conversation around the dinner table and talk about things like developing a college list. We want to help you find the best places for you. This is your decision, and of course, we need to talk about finances. But let's figure out how you can find places you're going to really love. And I understand that, you know, the counselor is an important part of this. How about if we set up a meeting where the three of us can talk to this counselor and get whatever resources or ideas from him or her? I think it's really important that you be involved with your son, and in many cases even take the lead, smiling and at the same time. I remember when I did this.
Yes, tell me about this.
I think my tongue had a big, deep furrow in it because I kept having to hold my tongue while they were going through the process. But there are any number of things that you can do. And the first thing is just let the kid know you're interested and that you want to help, and you want to help them find the place that's best for them.
Yeah. Now, is it normal for kids to stray far from home? What's the norm? Do most people stay pretty close to home, or do most people, you know, go 10 states over? Do you find? Is it a big mix?
I would say that it's changed and is changing. No more than maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, most students still went to they went to colleges that were maybe in their hometown or not too far away. But with every year, it seems that the world is opening up. And I think this is happening a lot because of the Internet, that there's so much more information available. Students are feeling their oats and deciding, well, you know, I live in Maine. I think I might want to go to California, or I want to go to Colorado.
Yeah, sure. Mine is like, I am going either to Colorado or to California. And I keep saying to my husband, it's like, you know, if all the kids are going to end up in California schools, we should probably just move back, that kind of thing. We've all got a pitch to kind of go to California. It's very cute.
Sure.
But you know, it's all funny, but we don't want to, let me ask you this too. We also don't want to crowd the older boy who's trying to, you know, be on his own. You know, just because he leaves for college doesn't mean the whole family has to move over 10 minutes from him.
Absolutely.
He's like, get away.
Well, I think visiting college is very useful because, you know, do you go to Colorado very often?
No, not Colorado. I'll ask you this too, because it seems like the kids often choose their college location based on sports activities also, and you know, a totally different place. You know, if you come from the cold weather, maybe they want warm weather or whatever. It seems like it's not just a choice about, well, that is a great school and I'm going to get a great education and I'm going to end up being a blah, blah, blah. It's like I hear out of my son's mouth every once in a while, they've got great snowboarding, you know, or something very funny.
Well, and those are pieces of the puzzle. And I think part of what you can do is you can help him to see that there are actually a lot more things that he can look at in terms of, are the people like me? What happens during the week and during the weekend? What is the area that he's interested in studying? Does he have any idea at this point?
My kiddo is very healthy. Everything health, everything doctor, everything.
Okay.
I don't think he thinks he has quite the grades to be a doctor, but I think he really wants to be like he's leaning toward like physical therapy. He's very interested in sports therapy, sports. The other thing he keeps talking about is sports lawyering as well. So it seems to be sports and then go from there.
Well, that's great. I mean, even that amount of information is really useful because part of what you can do, there's a book called The Book of Majors that's put out by the College Board. And in that book, they will list every single college that offers, let's say, sports medicine or physical therapy or pre-law. And you can get an idea about what's available in majors from that book. But you can also go, let's say you wanted to look at what's available in Colorado. Three colleges come to mind, University of Colorado at Boulder, which obviously is very, very involved with sports, and they have, major sports teams in football and basketball. Then there's a wonderful, wonderful college by the name of the University of Denver, which is a private college, and they're huge in hockey, but they have a marvelous business school, they have a hotel management school, and they're also good in any number of other areas that you could check into. And finally, there's this really cool private little school called Colorado College that is basically a college that is based on taking one course at a time. You spend 6 weeks and you take a course and you just focus on it. And again, for the right student, this is an amazing kind of thing to be able to do, not to be distracted by all kinds of things. And it's a very, very highly respected school and happens to be right next to some of the best skiing and snowboarding in the country. And so there are all kinds of ways to think about where to go to school, but helping your kid to find these places, visit them, see what's available in terms of going to school. And by the way, if he should happen to be someone who wanted to be a doctor, he doesn't have to be pre-med. The major thing about applying to medical school is that there are certain five or six courses you need to take, and you have to take the medical school test called the MCAT, but they actually are more interested in students who major in other than pre-med because that shows that they have interests and are alive and well and they're interesting people.
Yeah, I heard that about medical school. That you didn't necessarily have to be, a total brainiac to
absolutely
to be in there.
They're looking for people who are interested in people.
Yeah.
And have good grades.
And have good grades, yeah, exactly.
But those good grades can be in all kinds of things, and the things that you're really good at, and of course those just few courses that you need to take to get into medical school.
So interesting. Okay, let's back it up to the sophomore year then.
Yeah.
Let's say we're in that sophomore year, and the sophomore year seems a little bit more quiet. Like the freshman year, you're in there and you're just kind of learning your way around. Sophomore year doesn't seem like there's so much going on college-wise. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're right. And by the way, I just want to tell you again on this free website, I have timelines for everything that students should be doing each month of the year, freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior year. For example, in sophomore year, part of what I say is that this is a time to get serious about academics and extracurricular activities. So getting ready for college there means making good choices about what courses you take and then focusing in on activities. If freshman year wasn't really a good year for you, or it wasn't as much as what you hoped for, don't worry. You can really get a fresh start as a sophomore, and colleges appreciate students who are able to make a comeback as a student after a not-so-stellar first year. So everything is not lost.
Yeah.
Well, but when it comes to academics, you need to work with your school's counselor to make sure you're taking college prep courses that ensure your eligibility for the colleges that you might want to attend. And basically, in terms of extracurricular activities, this is a good time to focus your activities on two or three areas that you just love. Colleges are not looking for well-rounded students. They're looking for students who have one, two, or three interests that really are them. And so this could be anything. For example, my son started cooking when he was 3 years old. And when he basically was in high school, everything that he did was around cooking. He helped teach courses at Williams-Sonoma. He opened up a little business called Chef Jeff in Your Home. He taught preschoolers how to do math and reading through simple recipes, a little program that helped younger kids. And then he used to write papers about the culinary habits of Victorians, and he did physics experiments on food. So the message is not to brag about my son, but to say, look,
no.
Take who you are. Take what you're interested in, and it can be anything, and go with it and make it work every which way you can. And I have other examples I can talk about, if you'd like, about what other students have done in other areas.
Yeah, you know, I think we're good with what you just said. I think it's important for us to both be talking about our children because, well, it seems like we're really like we're having a chat about our own kids or whatever. We're really not. We're just using them as something that we know.
Absolutely.
We're not sitting here having a chat about our own kids and that they're the best and they should be following our example or anything like that. We're just really using them as examples, and I think everybody understands that because I'm about to open up this conversation to my freshman child.
Okay.
We are going to talk about my freshman kiddo.
Sure.
He's going to be mad we're talking about him, though, but we're going to. Now, he is he's very good at school, very everything, but he has his head in the Internet.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know quite what to, we have a new critter in our house. He has a million followers on his YouTube account,
mm-hmm.
and it's monetized. And so we've got somebody who's very deeply interested in
mm-hmm.
graphics and art and the Internet and putting it all together and web design and Photoshop and all
yep.
of that. And he's not so interested in English.
That's okay.
Doesn't
I mean
he's getting a bad grade or anything. He holds
no.
He holds 85% and so forth. But he is so focused on one thing. I mean,
that's
he's
wonderful.
Focused.
That is absolutely wonderful. You're very fortunate that you have a kid who is so focused. And as I said earlier, let him take it every which way he can. You know, during high school, there are amazing courses available for students. In the computer science area that colleges offer, that sometimes private organizations offer, help him to get even more involved. See about maybe his getting an internship with a company that is involved with these things. Go visit colleges that are known for computer science, like Carnegie Mellon, or they're actually specialty areas. Specialty colleges that just focus in on what you're talking about. There's a group called Full Sail in Florida, up in Washington. There's something called DigiPen, and in George Lucas has an organization called Expressions in Berkeley. Not that he's going to do this necessarily, but open the world to him.
Yeah.
We don't have enough people who really know about computer science to keep competitive in this country. And so if your kid is in this area, this is the future. Help him every which way to do what he's doing. But also encourage him not to ignore the other classes he has, because in order to get into good colleges,
what we had to focus on is like you can't, you're really good at this and everything, but we've got to round you out a little bit.
You need to prepare for college by taking the right courses. And these courses, by the way, will also add to your ability to deal with computer science. Computer science people still have to know how to write. They have to know how to communicate. They have to know how to do math. They have to know how things come together. And many computer scientists tell me sometimes it's taking a history course where they kind of see how things have changed so quickly in the world that help them realize what place that computer science might have in people's lives now, but how that can change.
Yeah, it's very interesting, too. And then, one of the things we said to him was, you can do all this computer stuff and you can do your grades and stuff like that, but we actually require this of our kids, of one activity that is school-related or outside school-related, but just one activity, not 10, one. Pick something you want to do, whether it's baseball or football or whatever, but one activity. And
Elizabeth,
bowling.
Good.
He's a bowler. Isn't that the funniest thing? But they all participate in just one thing, because there's four of them. And but they're not so crazy overscheduled that they can't also focus on their homework or, the other have a life.
Well, one of the things I found is that students can also take what they love and go every which way. I know one computer science person that I worked with ended up being a tutor, even for teachers and students at his school, so that he could help them with their problems. Another student basically took their computer skills to a local college and helped develop websites for different departments. And, you can take, let's say you're a history buff. You can go to the local historical society and do the computer science part for them with websites or helping them upgrade their software. There are interesting ways of taking what you love and making it work in ways that are very, very helpful to other people. Yeah. And colleges in particular like when you reach out and you can show that there's something beyond yourself, that there's something that you want to do to be helpful to people, to teach them, to tutor them, to do whatever is good.
Now, there are a lot of people in the world, and there are a lot of different kinds of students going out there into the world. There are some parents who write a check for the college. There are some people who take a loan out. There are some people who get it scholarships. Do you do anything financial aid? I noticed that your mission is to affect as many high school students as you can with their efforts to get into college and to do something worthwhile with their lives. What if you are sitting there and you come from an underprivileged area and you think college is hopeless? There's no way you're going there, or maybe you're going there, but you don't know how you're going to do it. You know what I mean? It's something that you want to do, but it doesn't seem attainable or reachable. There's a whole range of people from high school going to college. Do you find that most people can afford it?
Well, I think that no child should think they can't go to college because of they can't afford it, because there are all kinds of resources. And on my website, I have a special section for underserved students where I list books and organizations, even Spanish language resources, information about scholarships for Native Americans, Hispanics, African Americans, and general financial aid information specifically for underserved students. The major thing is that one of the things they should do is to talk to financial aid people at wherever they might be thinking of going to school. There's something called the financial aid calculator, and this is an online tool that is on every single college, and there's also a major tool on something called the FAFSA, which is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. The major thing is that students need to get in touch with a financial aid person in the college in which they're interested, because that's the person who can really help them know what it is that they will need to do in order to be able to get into college and to pay for it. Every college website has this, and essentially what you need to know is that there are all kinds of resources available, particularly for underserved students, but there are resources for students who are middle class in every area, and the people on the campuses are the ones who really, really know about this. They're called financial aid officers. Go talk to them. Get their help, because they're the ones who know what's going to be available to you. And you can also use this financial aid calculator to figure out how much is going to cost you based on your income, on your resources, and so forth.
Okay. Now, so it seems like there's a couple steps here. I remember going through this, too, when I was in college, you really need to pick that school first, or do you pick five of them at first, see what you get admitted to, and then see what you can afford? Or how does that go exactly, and when does that go? Does that mean that you would probably have to decide where you're going to go to college, maybe in your junior year, to get all the financial aid sorted through your senior year? I mean, do we need to be that planned out, or can this all happen in your senior year and it's going to be a whirlwind tour?
Well, it's an interesting thing because I think it's useful to know what you're getting involved with and go through and use the financial aid calculator so you have some idea of what it might be that college will cost you. However, what is really unknown is what kind of loans, scholarships, work study, whatever it is that's going to be offered you by the college. That's not going to come until after you have applied and you hear from the college in terms of whether you've been accepted. So as much as it's wonderful to plan ahead, basically students should find the schools that they're really interested in and apply to them. And what happens is if they're private colleges, you need to fill out something called the CSS profile. And this is a financial aid form provided by the College Board. And you can do that anytime in the fall. The second thing they need to do, and this cannot be done until the junior, until the senior year in January, and that's to fill out this FAFSA form, which is available free online. And this is a form that when you fill out goes to all the colleges you apply to, and essentially that's probably going to determine more than anything else what kind of monies are going to be coming to you from the school or possibly from the federal government in loans and so forth, and how much you will need to come up with. And that might be by the students working, by the parents' savings, by loans, any number of things. So be aware early on and probably in your junior year of what it's going to probably be like by using the financial aid calculators. And when you visit schools, for sure go talk to the financial aid people. But then remember to fill out those two really important financial forms, the profile and the FAFSA, and that will then lead to your being considered for whatever financial aid is available from the colleges. Does that make sense, Elizabeth?
Yeah, it does, actually. And I wanted to take this one step further, if we can. We have about 8 minutes left, and I wanted to just briefly, if we can, touch on scholarships and even sports scholarships, because there seems to be this distinct pattern I'm noticing with boys, that boys all think they're going to get, like, sports scholarships and play football at that college and play baseball at that college and play. Have you noticed that trend?
Yeah, I have.
I don't know if it's just my house, but boys think they're going to school to play baseball or whatever. You know, what's the reality there?
Well, the reality is it doesn't happen for that many people. And so they might play, but in terms of being a recruited athlete with room and board and tuition paid for, I don't have the percentages, but it's very, very low. And, of course, in order for that to happen, you have to be a hotshot. I mean, you have to be really, really good. And one of the things you can do, actually, and I think this is important to start doing, like, in the junior year, is what does your son play?
Well, he's not going to get a scholarship like that, but football and baseball.
Okay.
And he knows, but I notice it among friends. I've noticed
absolutely.
It him before. You know, it seems to be a very boy thing. No offense to boys or anything, love boys, have four of them, but they do very often think that they really are going to be a pro player and go through college and get that scholarship, and it becomes sort of a huge wake-up call.
Yeah. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that they need to do is in their junior year, particularly the summer before their senior year, is to begin contacting the coaches in the colleges in which they're interested, where they think they might want to play ball, and make that initial contact, because the coaches are the ones who are going to decide if they want them, and therefore they not only have to make the decision that whether or not they're going to, you know, offer scholarship. But let me tell you one other really important thing.
Sure.
Every college in the United States has a college admissions officer assigned to every single high school in the country.
Oh, and really?
And it really is one of the best, most important things you can do is to get in touch with that person, like when you're a junior even, but certainly the summer before your senior year. You can find out who they are by calling the college admissions office. Find out who the officer is, get his or her email address, send them an email and tell them you're interested in the school and that you would love to meet them at some point. The interesting thing is that colleges are very much into what they call demonstrated interest these years. And what this means is that if you are in touch with a college admissions person, if you go to visit the school and sign in, if they send you something and they send a card, the more connection you have with a college, this actually increases your chances of getting into that college. The reason why? Colleges don't want to accept people that they don't think are going to go there. So if the first time they've ever heard from you is when you turn in your application and they have somebody who's been in touch with them for a year or so letting them know how much they want to go there, who are they going to choose? They're going to choose the other guy.
So it is that personal. What do you have to do these days to get a graded type-based scholarship? Is that all A+, 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 and, you know, you've got to be an A-plus person? Or do they even do that anymore?
Well, they give out merit scholarships, and usually that's for people who, you know, have really good grades, like in the 4.0 region, and also they're very, very interested in good test scores. And if there's one piece of advice I could give you and the people who are listening to this is that there's no question by getting test tutoring, students can raise their test scores, and that itself made me more in terms of getting into schools than anything else. Grades and test scores are it, and after that, it's activities. And then throughout all of that...
Alone?
Pardon me?
You can't get in on your smile alone.
Well, smiles are not bad to have. Let me tell you, if you can interview and you got a good smile, that can mean a lot. But don't forget college essays. They're really important, really important.
College essays, grades, scores, kind of the stuff we sort of already know. But you, I think we have 2 minutes left, but I think overall what I'm hearing you say is that you would back this up even into the junior year.
Absolutely.
Early on to really start thinking about everything and moving forward, and even back maybe even toward the freshman year.
For planning.
Yeah, for planning. And it sounds like sophomore year is kind of a little bit of a grace rest, slightly, and then it kicks into full swing your junior year. So that it's interesting because that's kind of the way it's going here in our own household with four boys, minus the 10-year-old. He's I'll keep you posted what he does.
I'd love to know.
Cute. All right. So, boy, what a great call and what great information. Admission. I don't want to get that wrong.
Admission possible.
Admission possible.
One word.
And the book is titled the same. Can you get the book anywhere where books are sold? Like, can I throw that on my iPad or my Kindle?
Thank you. Number one, independent bookstores. Number two, Amazon.com. Number three, BarnesandNoble.com.
Cool.
And if they're not available in the bookstore, then ask for it.
Okay. And then any last, you have the last word. Do you want to say anything more?
Look, the key to being successful in college admissions, whether you're a C student or an A student, and you'll choose colleges based on that, is to be just a little bit different and just a little bit better than the competition, and that's not heard. And both my website and the book is all about how to do that, how to make it easier, and more importantly, how to be yourself, and that will help you to be very successful.
Love it. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you on, and I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope you join us at besteveryou.com. We'd love to have all of you listening there. And please visit Marjorie's website, admissionpossible.com. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.